Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. This is our telephone talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. In this first hour of Focus 580, we will be talking about heartburn. It seems to be something that at some time, maybe almost everyone has experienced. For most people, it is an occasional nuisance, and the symptoms can be treated with over-the-counter products. But for a growing number of Americans, it seems it is a persistent problem, something they experience many times a week. There are even people who'd say they experience it every day. This morning, in this part of Focus 580, we'll be talking with Dr. Anil Minocha. He is an expert on digestive disease. He's a practicing gastroenterologist. That means he's a doctor that specializes in treating the digestive organs and their problems. He's also a clinical pharmacologist. He's chief of gastroenterology at the Southern Illinois University School of Medicine in Springfield. And he is the author of a book that presents a lot of basic information on heartburn. If it's something that concerns you and you're looking for a good reference that has a lot of information between two covers, you should go out and look for this book. It's titled How to Stop Heartburn. The subtitle is Simple Ways to Heal Heartburn and Acid Reflux. It's published by Wiley. Is available in paperback. It's not terribly expensive and should be available in bookstore. And, of course, if you have questions, you should feel welcome to call in and talk with us this morning. I always mention on when we do medical shows, and we do a lot of them, just caution people a little bit that, of course, we can't do diagnosis over the telephone. There's a limit to what we can do here, and if you think that you have a problem, you want to be pursuing that with your own physician. But I don't want to discourage anyone from calling. We do programs like this, our other medical shows, to add to your knowledge, give you a place to start in asking some questions, and all questions are welcome, and I know that Dr. Minocha will do his best to give you an answer. Here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line that's good anywhere you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455, 333-WILL, and toll-free 800-222-WILL. Dr. Minocha, hello.
Oh, hi. Good morning.
Thanks for talking with us.
Thank you for having me.
Appreciate it. How many people have heartburn more than just occasionally? If we talk about those people who may say that they experience it several times a week, or maybe even those people who say they experience it every day, what sort of numbers are we talking about there, do you think?
Well, estimates vary depending on what kind of definition you use. For example, at least 44% of Americans would have at least once a month. 20% of Americans would have at least several times a week. 10%, one out of 10 every day of the week. So we're looking at anywhere from 40 to 60 million people who have this problem to some degree.
It seems that a persistent heartburn and reflux disease that we can go on and talk about is a growing problem, at least if the number of medications for it that are prescribed is any indication. Is this in fact a program that is a problem that is growing, or are we just more aware of it?
I think both. We're becoming more and more aware of it, and then our lifestyle has changed dramatically over the recent decades, and that's probably leading to an increase in the prevalence of this entity. If you look at literature from 100 years ago or the Eastern cultures, people don't even use the word heartburn. And so it's relatively recently defined entity, if you will, and people to this day keep dismissing it as just a simple nuisance, even though many of these people may be taking the whole bottle of Mylantar Tums every day and sometimes just come to the medical attention for the first time in the emergency room as an emergency.
Mm. Well, maybe what we should do at here at the beginning is to talk about the mechanics of heartburn here, because it does seem to be fairly clear when people experience those sensations that we use this term to describe, which often does feel like a burning sensation, hence the name, and some people may have other ways that they would describe it. What is it in the body that's happening to produce those sensations?
Heartburn, like you said, is a symptom. The problem is acid reflux. Acid reflux, in general, is a normal phenomenon. It's not abnormal. Everybody gets it every day. It's only when it starts to give significant symptoms or cause problems, we call it acid reflux disease. And when acid is coming up into your food pipe behind the chest, it gives burning sensation, sometimes coming up all the way to your throat, giving soreness and water regurgitation type symptoms. So a whole host of factors could contribute to exacerbation of this normal acid reflux phenomena. For example, hiatal hernia would be one thing, the presence of hiatal hernia. Obesity would be another thing. If the person doesn't have much of saliva, or the most important factor that is contributing to acid reflux is the problem with the lower esophageal sphincter, which is a one-way security valve between your esophagus and stomach. It is supposed to let the food down, but not let what it gets to the stomach come back up. Normally, it does snooze off a little bit here and there, and there is some reflux, and that's what causes normal acid reflux. But when the snoozing is too much, or there are other factors that overwhelm this security valve, for example, obesity or wearing tight-fitting clothes or pregnancy or eating too much or eating the wrong kinds of foods, it leads on to the acid reflux disease and its consequences.
Yeah. Let me, perhaps I should reintroduce our guest. And doctor, I'm afraid I may have been mispronouncing your name. Have I?
Anil Manocha.
Manocha. Oh, all right. Very good. Well, we tried hard to get people's names right. Our guest, Dr. Anil Manocha, is a gastroenterologist. That is, he is a doctor that specializes in treating the digestive system. He's chief of gastroenterology at the Southern Illinois University School of Medicine in Springfield and is the author of the book, How to Stop Heartburn, Simple Ways to Heal Heartburn and Acid Reflux, published by Wiley. Questions are welcome, 333-WILL, toll-free 800-222-WILL. As you've explained, The problem here is that we have this tube, the esophagus, is the thing that the food goes down to go into the stomach, and that there is a valve, a sphincter, which is there that's only supposed to let stuff go one way so that food goes into the stomach, but the contents of the stomach don't come back. And that's important because while the stomach is designed to hold acid, the esophagus is not. And that's why it happens, why you feel it if acid gets into your esophagus. Apparently, we also feel that there are certain things that will hamper the effectiveness of that muscle, that valve. Among them, alcohol, nicotine, caffeine. There apparently are thought to be some other things, and that's why one of the first lines of treatment is to start to talk to people about their diet. What do we have some idea why it is that these things are problematic?
Well, it depends on what kind of food you're talking about. For example, things like alcohol and smoking, they tend to relax the sphincter. So if the sphincter is loose, the stomach contents will come up. If you eat too much, that distends up the stomach or beyond its capacity to be able to push the food down, it will come up. Same thing is true for eating too much, the foods that relax the sphincter. For example, mint, onions, chocolate, those kinds of things. Another category would be things like orange juice or grapefruit juice, which by themselves can irritate your esophagus. So when they go down, they go straight to the stomach, but they can hurt a little bit, but if they keep regurgitating up, they will hurt even more.
Mm. So there, one of the, as I said, one of the basic first things that I know is suggested to people is that they do what they can to eliminate those things from their diet.
That is correct. There's about a quarter of the people that have chronic heartburn problems can be easily treated with the modification of their lifestyle related to the diet and sleeping habits and clothing, etc. So like foods we try to mention, eat meals that are small and frequent meals. Try to drink water with each meal. Do not exercise after meal. Exercise leads to increased reflux, and more severe the exercise, more reflux. But if you are exercising after food, that is a double whammy. That is further exacerbation of the reflux. And when you're eating food, when you feel satisfied, stop eating. There is no reason to continue eating just because it tastes good. So those are some of the things just in terms of how to eat. Then types of foods to avoid if you have acid reflux problem would be like beans, cabbage, cheese, chocolate, mints, etc., onions. Ginger, on the other hand, might actually help. Same thing is true for drinks. We can't do without fluids, but some fluids are better than others. The fluids or juices that could be somewhat harmful would be in descending order. For example, grapefruit might be the worst, then less so orange juice, then less so red wine, white wine, coffee, V8, tomato juice, pineapple juice, beer, Dr. Pepper, then the diet drinks, Diet Pepsi, Diet Coke, tea, carbonated beverages. And if you really do want to drink and that things that will help much, well, water is probably the safest one. Low-fat milk, 7-Up, Sprite, those things would be okay things to drink. And try to avoid drinks that are double whammy drinks. That applies to things when you're drinking, especially alcohol. For example, a Bloody Mary. It's got tomatoes, juice that you're supposed to avoid, and it's got alcohol that you're supposed to avoid. Eggnog. Now the Christmas season is coming. Well, a lot of calories, lot of food stuff in there that will shouldn't be taking when you have a heartburn problem. Well, plus the alcohol. Sangria. So whole host of things that you can do just for diet related that can help you reduce your acid reflux.
We have a caller here and would certainly welcome other people if you have questions for our guest. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Also, we have that toll-free line. That means if it would be a long-distance call for you, use that number and we'll pay for the call. That is 800-222-9455. We have a caller in Charleston to talk with on our line number 4 right here. Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
I was wondering if the doctor has ever heard of using probiotics or Acidolphus to help with acid reflux.
There is a company that has been promoting that for acid reflux. There is no data to support the use. I'm not saying it doesn't work,
okay,
but we don't know whether it works or not. Probiotics have been used for a lot of other digestive ailments, and in many of those, they have been shown to be very helpful, for example, diarrhea.
Okay.
But in acid reflux disease per se, there is no data to support or refute those claims.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the call. I think we have somebody else getting lined up here. And again, let me just give you that number, 333-9455. That's for Champaign-Urbana, folks. And we also have toll-free line that's good anywhere that you can hear us, 800-222-9455. And just to introduce again our guest, we're talking with Dr. Anil Manocha. He's a gastroenterologist. He is a practicing gastroenterologist. He also teaches at Southern Illinois University School of Medicine in Springfield. Next caller here in line in Urbana, line number 1. Hello.
Line 1?
Yes.
Hi. I was wondering if there's any statistics, statistical evidence, how much water these people drink every day, those who suffer from reflux. My own experience is that drinking inadequate water is often the cause of these symptoms, and they vanish as soon as you start drinking. I'm convinced that a large number of people would do the same, especially in the last few decades. We have come to drink so many pop drinks that drinking water has become kind of out of fashion until these bottled water drinks came up. I'll hang up and listen.
I agree with you on most of what you said. There is no data specifically that would suggest that water is helpful per se in acid reflux disease. But acid is the least thing amongst the fluids that's going to lead to reflux. And with every meal that we take, we are used to drinking something. And almost everything is going to contribute to acid reflux in one shape or the other. We recommend drinking water with every meal because water is not exactly neutralizing the acid component in your stomach, but at least it's diluting it out. And also, when you swallow, it's lubricating your esophagus so that things are moving down more smoothly. Did I answer your question?
I think, well, the caller hung up. I think that basically answers the question. And I think that probably that physicians would say, for a number of reasons, that most Americans are underhydrated that we all ought to be drinking much more water than we do.
I agree, and it's not just for acid reflux, just for the entire digestive system. We need to be drinking at least 6-8 glasses of water. I recommend to my patients 8 glasses of water a day. Because your gut will be moving much more smoothly and efficiently, and you will have much fewer digestive problems if you were simply to hydrate your gut.
Next caller is in Mount Carmel, and this is line number 4. Hello.
Yes. I used to have heartburn every day. I was eating 2 or 3 packs of Tums a day, and I decided to go on a diet. I needed to lose a little bit of weight, and I went on the high-protein, low-carb diet about the 1st of May, and since then I've had heartburn one time, and now if I eat something that's got sugar in it, I will occasionally get it, and I just wondered if the, I think my problem was all the sugar I was eating. Do you ever had that symptoms before?
Whenever there's a high caloric intake of food, no matter what you take, it will contribute to acid reflux. One big advantage when you're taking high protein and a very low carbohydrate diet is that you're losing weight also at the same time. So you're approaching the issue of acid reflux from two different angles. One is you're losing weight, and overweight contributes to acid reflux problem. And secondly, when there is high calorie intake of food into the stomach, that will contribute during that meal and soon after to the acid reflux and consequently its symptoms.
Yes, well, I've lost all the weight I wanted to, but I'm staying on the diet just because I don't have the heartburn anymore, and it's worth it to me not to have the heartburn because I used to have it every day, every night.
Right.
Okay, thank you.
All right, very good. Let's talk, Dr. Minocha, for a minute about medication, because there are some people who can take care of their symptoms simply by doing some of the lifestyle things we've talked about. I know that there are people who have said just by losing weight, they have dealt with their symptoms. There are other people who would then, as the last caller talked about, they come to understand that there are certain things that they might be eating that they're a problem, and if they cut down on those things or eliminate them, then the problem goes away. But then there are people who, having done all that, still have a problem, and so we need to talk about medication. For a long time, the gold standard was this class of medicines that actually now are available over the counter, your Tagamet, Zantac, Pepcid, those sorts of things. And one of the big advances that's come in the last few years is a different kind of medicine, and probably the best known are the drugs Prevacid and Prilosec. What do these drugs do, and how is it that the ones that we have now, the proton pump inhibitors, are different from the older ones, the H2 blockers?
Both these classes of drugs inhibit acid secretion. What happens is there is a cell in the stomach called parietal cell that secretes acid, and that cell can be stimulated by three different kinds of receptors. One of them is histamine. And this Tagamet, Axid, Pepcid type medication block that histamine receptor, histamine 2 receptor. Proton pump inhibitors, the other medications that you mentioned, Prilosec, Prevacid, Acifex, Protonix, and now Nexium, they block the final pathway in that cell in terms of acid secretion. Remember, that cell can be stimulated by three different kinds of receptors, including histamine. So when you're using histamine blocker, histamine 2 blocker, that particular cell can still be stimulated to produce acid. On the other hand, the final step in the pathway of acid secretion in that cell is what we call proton pump. And if you block that, no matter what receptors are stimulated on that cell will not secrete acid. So it stands to reason that this newer class of acid blockers, proton pump inhibitors, are much more potent in blocking acid than the histamine 2 receptor blockers, many of which are available over the counter now, this newer class has been shown to be a lot more efficacious than the histamine 2 blocker class of drugs.
Mm-hmm. Still, it seems that the real problem, if the real problem is the function of the esophageal sphincter, that taking medicines that will block the production of acid doesn't really get at what the problem is, which
is the
misfunction of the sphincter. Is now the only thing that we think can be done to improve that is surgery?
Exactly. We do not have any specific medications that will actually affect the cause of the disease. It's not the excess acid that's causing the disease. It's acid at the wrong place. Mm. It's supposed to be in the stomach and not in the esophagus. But since we do not have medications to block this regurgitation of the contents, we block the acid instead. Surgery can tighten up that one-way security valve and actually act at the core of the problem by preventing reflux. Unfortunately, the problem is that it's not as good as it sounds all the time unless it's in very good expert hands. So medications still form the first line of medication treatment for most physicians.
We have now several callers in line waiting to go, and we'll get right back to them, starting with Urbana, line number one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have two questions, actually. One is, since older people have a problem with malabsorption, by reducing the acid, this would make it even worse, would it not?
Two things. One is that it is a myth that older people have malabsorption. They do have somewhat less absorption of some micronutrients like calcium and B12, but in general, they don't malabsorb. That's number one. Number two, these proton pump inhibitors, by blocking a lot of acid, do not cause malabsorption. They can cause some bacterial overgrowth in the small intestine, but that is not clinically significant in causing any problems. There can be, to a small degree, less of absorption of vitamin B12, for example. But again, in most instances, it's not clinically significant. And usually physicians don't even test for it. It's this, because it just doesn't happen that much.
Okay. And my second question is, do you have any experience with using deglycerated licorice?
No, I've not had experience with that. I've read about it. But, and there is no data to my knowledge to support or refute otherwise, just like it is for most of the complementary medicines that can be used for reflux disease, and they're mentioned in the book also. But the best studied ones are the Western medications only.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
All right. Next up is a caller in Terre Haute on line two. Hello.
Yes.
Yes.
I've used to have problems with acid reflux years ago. And I had not had any problems for a long time. However, a year and a half ago, I began getting very weak. And in about a 12-hour period, I lost so much blood that I required 4 units of blood. So I had I had ulcers and bleeding ulcers in my stomach, large ones. So after my medical examination, they found that my esophagus was, I think the term is styrated or striated, but they determined I had acid reflux problems. So they put me on Prilosec, and then since then I've gone to Nexium. My question is, do these medications do anything for the ulcer problem? And then secondly, I'm also a heart patient, and I'm on Cardizem. I've been told that Cardizem causes the some of the muscles and valves in the body to relax. Would this medication have anything to do with this type of a problem?
First of all, question number one. These acid-blocking medications are the treatment we routinely use for treatment of ulcers. So those would heal the ulcers pretty efficaciously, if you will.
Yes.
As far as the reflux disease, these medications are helpful. And I would like to point out that as we grow older, our symptoms for acid reflux disease are not the same as when we are younger. And a lot of times, these are very nonspecific symptoms, like we may just have chest pain, a little bit of difficulty swallowing, or food slow to go down, just some wheezing, bronchitis, some dental problems, hoarseness, or just some pneumonias rather than having frequent, typical heartburn symptoms. So the spectrum of symptoms changes as we grow. So during the 1.5 years when you didn't have any symptoms does not mean that the acid reflux was not going on necessarily. Obviously, you had damage to the esophagus. And with age, as well as certain changes in the esophagus, the sensitivity to acid gets modified, and there can be fewer symptoms or different symptoms. Regarding what was the question number two again?
It was about Cardizem. Does
Cardizem is one of the medications that has the potential to relax your sphincter, which is the one-way security valve. And while it is not contraindicated, we usually recommend that you talk to your doctor to see if there is any substitute available. The problem is that many of these high blood pressure and heart medications, they all have similar effect on the sphincter. So there may not be a good substitute available, but you should talk to your doctor because there are certain heart medications that do not have effect on the sphincter.
I see. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Thanks for the call. One of the things I think we've, an important thing that we have learned about ulcers in the last, I don't know, decade or something, is that a significant portion of ulcer disease is the result of infection with a bacterium, the Helicobacter pylori, and that in many cases, I think, in treatment of ulcer, once that's determined that this is present, then in addition to using a medication that would block acid production, people might also be treated with antibiotic to take care of the H. pylori, and that has been a big advance in the treatment of ulcer. Is there any thought that perhaps there could be some infectious component operating in reflux disease?
There is no thought with respect to causing or contributing to the disease. I'm glad you asked this question because H. pylori, Helicobacter pylori, may actually be protective against reflux disease problems. So people who have H. pylori in their stomach, they tend to have lesser acid and lesser consequences of reflux stemming from that. So it's in many ways it's helpful. That is not to say that if you have ulcers in your stomach, you shouldn't get rid of it. It's just that we need to be aware that all Helicobacter pylori is not bad Helicobacter pylori in the stomach. And your point about ulcers is well taken. We used to think that stress causes ulcers, like you remember your mom saying, "You are giving me an ulcer." I know I can remember it. Yeah, almost every day my mom said that. But now we know that almost 70 to 90% of the ulcers, depending on the location of the ulcer, are related to Helicobacter pylori infection. And number two common cause is aspirin-like medications, aspirin, Advil, all these arthritis medications that we take. Between the two of them, they can account for most of the ulcers. Certainly there are some tumors, certain other things can give ulcerations too, but between these two, you can account for most ulcers. So when you do have a stomach ulcer and your doctor determines that it's Helicobacter pylori infection, obviously you treat the ulcer, but at the same time, you get a combination of antibiotics. One antibiotic is not going to work because this is a very hard bug to get rid of. So you're given a combination of antibiotics to get rid of it so that the ulcer does not come back. Before we knew about Helicobacter pylori, we used to give Tagamet or Zantac or Pepsidoraxid continuously to prevent it from coming back. Now, simply by getting rid of this bug, we can prevent it from coming back. But this will be true for the ulcers due to Helicobacter pylori. For the ulcers that are caused by aspirin-like medications, which are called non-steroidal anti-inflammatory medications, well, either you have to stop taking those medications for ulcer not to come back, or you have to take an additional medication as a prophylaxis to prevent its recurrence. And I would also like to add at this point a very important thing. You all have heard about COX-2 inhibitors. There are a lot of commercials on TV also. They are maybe less toxic to the stomach, but they do not entirely eliminate the risk of ulceration to the stomach. They are only shared better. Their cost is much higher, but they are only shared better. They do not eliminate the risk for ulcers and bleeding from your stomach. We've seen several cases from these newer medications like Celebrex and Vioxx.
Hmm. All right, very good. Well, the lines are full here, so we'll just go back and try to talk with as many people as we can. The next caller in line is in Chicago, and that's line four. Hello.
Thank you. In line of improving one's digestive, I've turned to what might be called proper food combining. That is, instead of eating everything and anything in sight or whatever one had a taste for, I'm being more selective, and some thoughts on food combining such that if we were to eat protein with vegetables and not starch, we would have a better digestive process since some foods are more manageable. And whereas we eat starch with protein, there's a chance that the food more or less lays there and isn't more completely digested than if one were to only eat starch with vegetables. You know what I'm saying about that? Do you have any observations on it?
I'm not familiar with any data with the combination of different kinds of foods. But as I mentioned earlier, the larger the volume of the food that you take, the more the reflux. The more the calories there are in the food that you take, more the reflux. So if you are able to control yourself and not eat whatever is in your sight, and eat what you need to and get done when you're satisfied, that would certainly go a long ways to prevent an acid reflux problem.
Yes, that seems to be working in terms of my observing not to eat starch with protein. But another point, as we mature, some have observation in some medical newsletters that said we have less hydrochloric acid in our system. With the occasional supplement like tincture of hydrochloric acid or betaine hydrochloric acid be more beneficial if we were to augment or supplement our digestive with that?
There are some people who will develop atrophic gastritis and somewhat less secretion of acid in the stomach. I am not familiar with any recommendations supplementing acid to the stomach.
All right. We'll go next to another caller here. This is Champagne. It's line one. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
Well, obviously, a lot of people have problems because you've had a full line most of the time. But about 15 years ago, I developed acid reflux disease, which I attributed to oral cytoxin for a year on chemo. It got so bad that 5 years ago, the fluids were flowing into my lungs, and they did fundoplication surgery, and it has been extremely successful, but I do want to ask if there is any research on follow-ups, because I have read that there are indications that people who've had fundoplication often die of a heart condition within 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
You read anything or heard anything about this?
I think I've read some of the same stuff, as a matter of fact.
First of all, fundoplication is a very effective means, as we talked about earlier, in tightening up the sphincter and preventing reflux. But unfortunately, it's not doesn't work always in theory as it should in practice. The follow-up study that you are referring to, it was a follow-up of a trial that was done in late 80s and early 90s comparing fundoplication surgery to the medical treatment, in which it was found that medical treatment, surgical treatment worked well. What the investigators did was, 10 years later, they followed up all the patients that had had surgery. And those who had been on medical treatment, see how they were doing. What they found was that as many as 62% of those who underwent surgery 10 years ago were still requiring some kind of acid-blocking medication. So leading to the conclusion that we should not tell the patient that if you undergo surgery, you will not require medication. We cannot guarantee that. That's number one. In the same study, it was found that for some reason that the patients who underwent surgery, there were more deaths than the ones in the medical treatment, and those deaths were related to heart. However, the authors took very great pains to point out that these increased deaths were not related to surgery in any way, shape, or form.
Uh-huh.
These were cardiac deaths. It just happened to be in that group.
I thank you very much. Well, I guess I'm one of the lucky ones because I've had absolutely no trouble. But
great.
Thank you. It's been very interesting.
All right. Thanks for the call. Let's go to line number two. This is Urbana. Hello.
Hi. I just
heard the tail end of the discussion that you were having about heart medication and how that might affect digestion. I just went on Atenolol. It's a beta blocker for a thyroid condition, hyperthyroidism, actually, due to Graves. And I'm just wondering, could you repeat whatever it was that you were saying about how something like Atenolol might affect digestion, appetite, any of those sorts of things?
Many of these heart medications and blood pressure medications will loosen up your sphincter that's supposed to prevent things from coming back up. And that is how they increase acid reflux. And so it's just whether it's beta blockers or calcium channel blockers, like a previous caller was talking about, Cardizem. They basically relax the sphincter and promote acid reflux. Ordinarily, you would not have any problem. But if you already have the problem or you're prone to get the problem, it will make it worse.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
All right. Thank you. And to line number three, this is Champagne. Hello.
Yes. Hello. Can you tell me along that same line, are the blood pressure drugs like Valsartan and the other classes, do they have the same effect?
Could you repeat the medication, please?
It's Valsartan. It's called Diovan.
I'm not familiar with this medication. If I had to guess, I think it's an ACE inhibitor, what you're talking about. And ACE inhibitors or things that are related to ACE do not affect the sphincter.
Okay.
It's usually the beta agonists or beta blockers or calcium channel blockers or nitrates. They are the ones that will alter your sphincter. Same thing would be true for any sedatives, hypnotics, or their combinations, or estrogen, progesterone, etc., whether you're taking for hormone replacement or for birth control pills. Those are, and antidepressants, the older antidepressants, those are the kinds of medications that contribute to acid reflux.
I see. I think this drug comes in the class of angiotensin II blockers,
so that'd
be a different group.
That's ACE, okay. So it won't.
And another question that I had was about the drugs like Prevacid and Nexium. The labeling says that they're not for long-term use, yet when they get prescribed, the doctor seems to say stay on them, and you have to stay on them. Is there any indication that long-term use could be harmful, or do you just have to expect that?
Initially, when these medications came out, there was a black box warning that they should not be used for more than a month because there was a chance that they might, you know, patients might develop cancer. We have about 16 years of experience now with these medications, and there has not been even one case of cancer so far related to these medications. If we had to compare this class of medications to the lot of other medications we take, for example, even aspirin, these would favor, the risk-benefit would favor this Prilosec, Prevacid type medication. These are remarkably benign drugs. Of course, nothing is absolutely safe. Nothing is absolutely side effect-free. But these are remarkably safe, remarkably benign drugs, and for over 16 years of experience, no major side effects. You do need to be aware that they do have some interactions, at least some of the medications have drug interactions, so if you're taking other medications, you need to talk to your doctor, see if that medication can interact with your Prilosec or Prevacid, etc.
Okay.
But remarkably safe.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. We have about 10 minutes left in this first hour of Focus 580, and our guest is Dr. Anil Minocha. He is an expert on digestive disease. He's a practicing gastroenterologist and also clinical pharmacologist. He is chief of gastroenterology at the Southern Illinois University School of Medicine at Springfield. And if you're interested in information on heartburn, you might look for a book that he's authored. It's titled How to Stop Heartburn, Simple Ways to Heal Heartburn and Acid Reflux. That's the subtitle. It's published by John Wiley & Sons. It is a paperback and not terribly expensive and should be available in the bookstore. Questions, too, are welcome. We'll get in as many as we have time for, 333-WILL and toll-free 800-222-WILL. There was a while when there was another kind of drug that was being used in some people who had reflux, and this was a drug that was intended to facilitate stomach emptying. Propulsid, I think, is the main drug that was used, which now apparently has been withdrawn or is not being used because there were some problems connected with it. Have people in your field gotten away from the idea that that's a good strategy or useful strategy, that is to make sure that food moves through the stomach more quickly than it would otherwise?
It's a great strategy in theory, and the pharmaceutical companies are pursuing. The problem has been that we have not been able to find good, effective drugs that would actually do that. You are correct about Prepulsid. It was equally effective as Zantac, Tagamet, Pepcid, but because of his cardiac toxicity, heart problems, and deaths related to that, it had to be withdrawn. These days, there's only one medication that facilitates gastric stomach emptying that's available, the older medication called Reglan, but it has significant side effects and it will be helpful only in some mild cases at best, not for a routine use in patients who have injury to the esophagus.
Okay. Let's go again to the phones here. We have a caller in Champaign on our line number one. Hello.
Hi. Well, I've got a question. You know, my stomach has, you know, been very sensitive over the years to things like orange juice and tea, but also a lot of antibiotics just seem to set fire to my stomach, and some other things like Allegra seemed to do it to such an extent that I was in incredible pain, and they did an endoscopy and said that there was the beginning of Barrett's syndrome. So they put me on Acefex, which seemed to help, and the next year they did another endoscopy this past summer, and I was really uncomfortable for days after that endoscopy, and I waited 14 days before I did anything like take ibuprofen, but I did around 14 days after the endoscopy, and for a week was in intense pain, even though I was taking two Acefex, and they told me to drink Gaviscon, and this went on. You know, I would have like two or three good days, and then I'd have four or five days of agony, and this went on for like 2 months. And nobody can explain this to me except that my stomach must have been irritated. So I'm wondering if you can help me out.
Well, I'm unable to offer anything specific related to those symptoms. It's unusual for the endoscopy itself to do any kind of problem. Obviously, you had been having acid reflux problem for a very long time. Otherwise, you would not have developed Barrett's esophagus, which I might add for the other listeners is a precancerous condition occurring as a result of longstanding acid reflux. And people who do have Barrett's esophagus need to have endoscopy periodically to see if there are any further worsening changes that need further management. All these patients obviously need treatment like the one you're getting. In terms of 2 days bad, 3 days good, that is somewhat unusual just with injury to the esophagus, if you will. But there is an entity known as functional heartburn, which is like some of your listeners might be aware of, irritable bowel syndrome, irritable colon. And just like that, even small amounts of acid in these people, because of very low threshold for development of symptoms in the esophagus, these people tend to get more of symptoms with least amount of acid. And those things tend to occur in an irregular fashion.
And what do you do for it?
The treatment is basically similar in terms of try to block acid as much as you can. First of all, before I even talk about that, I must say that there are some people that even that have symptoms even on twice a day, for example, PPI like Acefex you're taking, about one third of them who are having symptoms despite taking double the dose will actually have inadequate acid suppression. So you can actually look for that if we are actually being able to suppress adequately the acid or not, because it could be acid is still not suppressed to a sufficient degree, leading to reflux and leading to symptoms, or it is something else like functional heartburn component going on. Once you have adequately taken care of the acid secretion, that only way thing that people do most of the times is to use low doses of antidepressants, which tend to raise the threshold for the symptom development in these patients, just like they do in irritable bowel syndrome.
Hmm. Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you. There, I know that that the proton pump inhibitors, in certain cases, particularly in cases where there is, I guess, a rare condition where some people simply, their bodies produce too much acid, and that in some of these cases, the proton pump inhibitors, people are taking hundreds of milligrams of these drugs a day, where I guess the basic dose might be, I don't know, 20 or 40. How much of these drugs can you take, and for how long?
The condition that you are referring to is called gastrinoma Zollinger-Ellison syndrome, which is related to a tumor, and there is excessive secretion of acid in these people, and people require at least 3, 4, 5 times the acid the medication, because the acid secretion is too high in those people. Short of those people with tumor, but most of the people you will be able to effectively treat with single-dose medication. I would like to point out that many people who are taking these medications are not taking them correctly, too. When you take a medication like proton pump inhibitor, you have to take that half an hour before breakfast or with breakfast. You cannot take it in the morning and then have your first meal at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Its efficacy would be very low. About a quarter of the people will not have acid suppression to a sufficient degree if they are taking once-a-day dosing. They need second dose, which would be, again, needs to be taken before supper and not at bedtime. The reason I'm emphasizing this is because the other class of medications, histamine 2 blocker, Zantac, Pepcid, Axid, they tend to work best if they are taken first dose between breakfast and lunch and the second dose at bedtime. This is different. You don't take a proton pump inhibitor at bedtime. And there are a few people who will require 3-4 times the dose even of these medications, even without having any tumor. Mm.
And I gather there are also some people who, some doctors who prescribe for their patients both H2 blockers and proton pump inhibitors. What do you think, there's some benefit to a strategy like that?
I think it's very helpful. And the reason for that is that it's been noted that in some patients, no matter how high the proton pump inhibitor medication you give, in the middle of night, there is a huge surge in acid secretion, so they get symptoms. If you increase the PPI, sometimes it doesn't work. On the other hand, if you just use a single dose of H2 blocker at night, that seems to be a lot more efficacious. So combining the two class of medications is helpful in many cases. I know we're running out of time. I want to make one point before we run out of time.
Yes.
Is the sleep. Sleeping is very important. When we are asleep, we have greater degree of acid reflux going on and a greater degree of damage. So the key thing is to use a 6-inch block of wood under the head end of the bed. That will increase the acid clearance by as much as 60%. Secondly, do not sleep, do not go to bed right after eating. Have at least 2-3 hours wait, and do not eat bedtime snack just before eating. Number three, if you can, eat sleep on the left side rather than on the right side if possible. On the left side, there is much less acid reflux, and whatever acid comes up, it gets cleared very quickly.
Well, as you say, we have used our time, and for people who are interested in reading more, I want to mention again that our guest, Dr. Anil Manocha, has written the book, How to Stop Heartburn, Simple Ways to Heal Heartburn and Acid Reflux, published by John Wiley & Sons. Look for it in the bookstore. Dr. Manocha, thanks very much for talking with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much.